Morning, everyone. In my message this morning, which is a sort of testimony to my life, I feel I need to tell you a little bit about my childhood, because I think it's probably the most important part of your life when it comes to becoming a Christian. Am I speaking loud enough? I was born in a place called Davyfield Farm, Eccles Hill, Darwin. My mother and father rented a farm there. And I know it sounds like a little, very small farm, but it was in an area of high rainfall and very heavy pollution. And I'm not sure whether that pollution didn't help grass grow, but from a farmer's standpoint, that part of the world grows grass like it's hard to believe. That country was called the Black Country. And if you put your hand on the top of a gate, it came up black. That's how bad the coal was that was burned in that area. And people didn't have centrally heated homes, but they burned a lot of coal because they had these crazy open fireplaces that a lot of the heat went out the top. Anyway, it's hard for me to say what the rainfall was in that area, but in an area I lived in later, the rainfall was 70 to 80 inches a year. But one of the greenest places in the world. My father was Roman Catholic. My mother joined the Catholic Church when they got married. And I was christened in the Catholic Church. In those early memories, which, you know, you try to remember when your memory kicked in and it stayed with you, but I do remember my mom having prayers with us. I had two brothers, one younger and one older. We're very close together. And we have remained very close all our lives. But mom did have prayers with us when we were little children. We did not go to church. But the reason for not going to church is that my mom and dad were excommunicated from the Catholic Church for reasons of birth control. Anyone that knows anything about the Catholic Church will know what that's about. Some of my first memories are not good ones. I remember being out in the field with my parents, and in those days, farmers grew quite a lot of root crops to feed their livestock, like turnips, a thing called mangels, which is kind of like a sugar beet. And we would be out in the field weeding. I'm not saying I was weeding, but my parents were, and a Nazi plane would come over, and you had to run for the ditch. Now, Father would usually grab two of us, but You headed for the ditch and you hid there till that plane disappeared, because sometimes they just dropped their bombs because they couldn't find anything to bomb. They dumped them anywhere, even on farmsteads. We were half a mile from a, or less than half a mile from a factory that had been a paint works, and it was turned to a munition factory, and that factory was known about by the Germans because they never quit looking. But obviously it was well camouflaged and they never hit her. Another memory that I never thought of it as amusing till I got older, but one night we slept three boys in one bed. My mom came to check us before she went to bed herself and couldn't find the boys. Well, the boys had got under the bed because the sirens went off so many times that night, we were scared. And we pulled the blankets and everything under the bed and thought maybe it was safer there if the roof fell in. But anyway, of course, Mother had to remake the bed. In England at that time, you started school when you were 5 years old. As soon as you turned five, wherever, whatever came closest, your Christmas, Easter, or summer. And the school that was closest to us, I'm sure my father would have liked us to go to a Catholic school, but there wasn't one that close. And you could not get petrol or gasoline, as it's called here, to take your kids to school. And the closest school was occupied by the military. Soldiers were being trained there. So we had a terrible walk to a school called Belthorne, which was down through the valley and up the other side. And it wasn't an easy walk for a little kid. But I remember going to that school, and I wasn't the only kid that fell asleep in there. And they had a little room where you could go if you were sick, but they often put you in there to have a half an hour nap. I don't remember a lot of that school, but maybe I went there for 3 or 4 months, and the soldiers gave up the closer school, which was called Blackamoor. And I do well remember, and these schools were Christian schools, which most of them were in England at that time. There were schools called council schools, but which were not related to any church. But this particular school, Blackamoor, was connected to the Church of England. And I think it's there where my memory kicked up to the stories of Jesus and Mary and Joseph. And I think we all realize that that story is one that stays with you. Anyway, I was 6 years old when my parents decided they had an opportunity to rent a larger farm. And Mother used to say that it was partly because of the bombing in that area that they wanted to move. So we moved, and it was only 10 or 12 miles away, but it was a much, I don't want to say nicer area, because even that area where I was born is a beautiful area today. But it was, we were up on a hillside, neighbors weren't that close. It was a bigger farm, 104 acres. And as kids, it was kind of like moving to heaven. It was really something. But even there, you could look out the back door and see 60 of those huge chimneys pouring out black smoke. They were cotton mills, woolen mills, iron foundries. And pollution was still a major problem. But about that time, as little kids, we were at Easter and Christmas, and during the summer, we would go and have holidays. We called them holidays. You went to visit your cousins. And we also went to visit my granny and grandpa, who were my mom and dad's parents. And there I went to the Church of England. And somehow that didn't get back to my father, because he did not want us going in other churches other than Catholic. But anyway, there was a start to going to a different church. Now, when I visited cousins, they're mostly Catholic, so there I went to the Catholic Church, and I think, especially going as a child, there's a certain thing about the Catholic Church, the way they hold their services, very, very reverent. And although you didn't understand quite a lot of it, I did enjoy going to church. Those were holidays that were usually very enjoyable. My grandfather, who had his own small business, and his factory had been taken over during the war, and I enjoyed going there very much. He employed about 20 women, and the reason he employed women was because the men were gone. And he did have one or two men that were in charge of furnaces, etc., but that was enjoyable. Anyway, when we moved to High House Farm, that was in 1943, still a war on, we went to Knoll Green School, which was about a mile downhill and into the valley. Knoll Green School, like many country schools in England at that time, was a two-room school. You always had two teachers. Grade 1 to grade 3 would be the one school, and then the upper grades in the other. And I remember having a lot of fun at that school. No air raid shelters. No sirens going off. We were far enough away from the densely populated factories, etc. One of the games that was played was called Rounders. This was played by boys and girls, which is very much like the North American softball. We also played that in phys ed time. The boys played soccer in the wintertime and cricket in the summertime. I also remember that school had been built to be a church at one time. It had a graveyard either side of it, the old graveyard and the new graveyard. And as kids, we loved to play hide-and-go-seek in there. But, of course, if the teacher caught you, you got the strap, so. When I was 14, we had to go to a finishing school, and that was a school where, in those days, you were encouraged very much to say what occupation you wanted to be in. You want to be a carpenter. The math in this particular school was adjusted to cover the type of math you would need. And of course, at a very early age, if somebody asked, what do you want to be when you grow up? I always wanted to be a farmer. So you took farm arithmetic, where you learned a little about livestock husbandry and, yards in an acre and all that stuff. Anyway, that was a different look at school and quite enjoyable. You learn to meet a lot of new people, of course. One funny thing happened when we were there. It was the Church of England also school. During Lent, every Tuesday, we had to go to church. And I think school started at 8:45. About 5 minutes later, you were heading out of school, and we only had a block and a half to walk to go to the church. But that seemed to be about the time my father would be coming through the village with his car and his load of milk cans on behind the car. And my older brother and I found it necessary to hide behind some hefty girls so that Papa couldn't see us. After leaving school, I went to work for my father, as my older brother was working for my father. And it was in the good old days when so much of the work was done on the end of a shovel or a fork. But I always enjoyed the farm, and the work, I suppose, didn't seem as hard as it looks when you look back, but everybody was in the same boat, and even at nights when maybe you wanted to earn a little extra money, I would often go and help neighbors with jobs. One of the jobs that I was sort of famous for was building dry stone walls, which people here call stone fences. But anyway, my father had taught me that skill when I was growing up, and I built up a lot of stone walls. Now I'm talking about, these were not new walls. Pieces of wall would fall over because moles got in the bottom and pushed the dirt up, and then when there was a frost, piece of wall would fall over, or maybe too much water. So fixing the stone fences was a fairly continuous job in that area. The stone fences, by the way, are only up on the hillside. The lower land does not have the stones in it. Anyway, during this time I worked for Father, I joined a youth club run by Christian people. That youth club became very, very popular. We had a meeting once a week in the school that I had gone to as a younger boy. And some of the things we did was like dances on Saturday night, and we would go to the gasworks to see how the gasworks was run. You know, that was coal gas they made in there, and it was piped around to the houses in town. Also, the street lights were run by gas in those days. But I think it was a very enjoyable time in my life, and also some church connections, because it was run by Christians, which I found enjoyable. Anyway, in January 1957, I had a little accident, and I slipped off a hay mow. This was in the days when we're putting all the hay up loose, and hay was mostly put under cover because of the excessive rain. But anyway, I broke an ankle quite badly, and I was in the hospital for 2 weeks. And a couple of the boys from the youth club visited me one day, and They said they were going to Canada. And I said, if you guys are going to Canada, I'm coming too. And because I had, and I suppose they really kicked that into gear because you got a lot of time to spare in the hospital, but I had thought about going to Australia and done a little inquiring before that, but the trip to Australia, there's no way I had that much money. But you could get assisted passage, but my father called borrowing on time the never-never system, and I'm afraid if I'd been going on anywhere on assisted passage, he would never have signed my passport because, or at least my mother told me that in later years, because he just didn't believe in borrowing money when you, you know, I know he owned his own farm by this time, and he borrowed a lot of money to buy that farm, but you didn't use it for things like that. Anyway, in 1957, July 17th to be correct, I left for Canada. And this is news to some people, some Canadians, but you were helped by the Canadian Pacific Railway. They were the ones that helped you go for your medical, and medical was very important coming to Canada. Chest x-rays were done more than once. There's no way you could come to Canada with TB. And in 1957, there was a little recession, maybe on this side, I don't remember, but they were only taking farm workers and some other specialized workers, so that as a kid born and raised and working on a farm, I could fill the bill. Anyway, the trip to Canada from Liverpool to Montreal on just about a brand new ship called the Sylvania was a very enjoyable, probably the first real holiday I ever had. But I was only on there 24 hours and I knew I had a real problem. People couldn't understand me. I spoke a broad Lancashire dialect, and people laughed when I talked. Others said, here's Wilford Pickles. And Wilford Pickles was a comedian that spoke on the radio at that time. But anyway, I knew I had to smarten up with my English, and there's a lot of Canadians on that ship. Canadians had been back for to visit relatives, and a few new Canadians like myself, or a few emigrants like myself. But anyway, by the time I got off that ship in Montreal, I had grasped a fair bit of that Canadian lingo. And I did get another shock. After getting off the ship in Montreal, I had to go to the railway station. The CPR had got me a job in Penobscot, New Brunswick. And they did pay my trip on the train to Penobscot. But while I'm waiting for the train, I went over to get a little breakfast. And boy, those girls behind the counter didn't even speak English. Well, I had taken quite a bit of Canadian history, being part of the British Commonwealth at that time, and I knew that Quebec was French, but I didn't know they didn't speak English. Anyway, when I got to New Brunswick, the people I was going to work for spoke English. I worked on that farm for 2 months. It wasn't that easy. I actually was getting $75 a month plus room and board. And I had been earning more money for way less hours in England. But anyway, I got a chance to work on another farm. The pay was a little higher. And I found out after I got there, they didn't work the long hours, although it was a dairy farm like the other one. They had 6 children. The oldest boy wasn't much younger than me, so it was a good time. But I was only hired there for 2 months. I had to help them get the turnips in and dump them in the cellar under the barn bridge. And I helped with the milking and filled the woodshed with wood. But I generally enjoyed that, working with them very much. Anyway, when my 2 months was up, he came to me one day. This is the boss man. His name was George McLeod. And he said, I talked to a guy in Sussex today who's looking for someone to help on the farm. He says that he's quite a young fella. He just took over his father's farm 2 or 3 years ago. And he says it's quite a big dairy farm. So anyway, the next day he came to see me, and I had agreed to start work there I went there Sunday night and started work Monday morning. And although they had 3 young children before they were through, they had 7 young children. But anyway, at that time, he was a pleasure to work for. I babysat their children for them, but when Christmas time came, I was included in all the family gatherings, and it was a good experience. And of course, I would ask them about other parts of Canada, and Ken Brown had cousins out in Western Canada, and when I started talking about other parts of Canada, or talking about even trying to get a farm in New Brunswick, and a lot of New Brunswick at that time had some abandoned farms that, the land was broke, but growing back up in brush again, but there was some cheap farms to be had. And of course, my dream was to own my own farm. But when I started to talk to Kenny about this, he always said, "Go west, young man, go west." So, in the spring of the following year, I headed west. The cheapest way to go west was by bus. It was much cheaper than the railway. But the bus at that time left St. John's, headed into the States, came back into Canada up to Toronto. I think there it changed buses. And I had met quite a few Canadians on the ship. I spent a few days in Toronto and visited those friends. Enjoyed it very much. And then headed out back west again. And my destination was Edmonton. From somewhere in North Dakota, we headed up to Winnipeg. And at Winnipeg, we headed straight west. The rest of the way was Canadian. And I remember one of the first towns we came to was called Portage la Prairie. And it had rained pretty good, and of course the snow hadn't been long gone, and boy, the streets were as a mess. There wasn't much gravel. And I looked at this little town and I figured this had to be about the last place that God made. But anyway, I learned a little more about little towns after that. The trip was quite enjoyable, but anyway, when I got to Edmonton, my first night I spent at the YMCA. The next morning I went to the place, and I don't know the name in England, what do you call it, the unemployment office, but anyway, there was a farmer there looking for help. He was from Warrenville, and he hired me. The wage was $150 a month, which was quite a bit better than New Brunswick, although with Kenny Brown I got $150 a month. I should tell you something that happened when I was with Kenny. I asked if I could have a Sunday off and go visit my friends back in Penobscot, and he said, I'll see what I can do. And I was paid by the day, $4 a day and $5 on Sunday. And I was asked if I would like to go to church with them on Sunday morning, and they belong to the United Church. And of course, I asked about this United Church, and it sounded pretty good. We're, you know, a church where three or four churches had got together, and that had been sort of quite a hassle in my growing up. You know, if you married a Catholic girl, you had to turn Catholic, and like the church was quite an issue. So that this United Church sounded pretty good. So I went to church with Ken and Pauline every Sunday after that. But anyway, this particular Sunday I wanted to take off. He came to me and he said, I can't get anybody to help me with milking. Oh, we were milking close to 100 cows, and it was a two-man job. In those days, it wasn't an automatic pipeline. And anyway, he said, after church, we'll take you down to Penobscot. You visit your friends. We'll visit some relatives. We'll pick you up and we'll be back home at 4 o'clock to milk, and you won't lose your pay. So that's how my Sunday days off were after that. Anyway, this gentleman that hired me in Edmonton lived close to Morinville, about 7 miles, I believe, from Morinville. They were a Catholic family, and I think they had 6 or 7 kids at that time. They had about 11 before they quit. But anyway, I went to Mass with them on Sunday. And not knowing a lot about the United Church or the Catholic Church, I asked quite a lot of questions. And I started to take lessons there. And I think I went twice a week for lessons. And I guess I found it interesting. They gave me a Bible, which that was the first time in my life I read a Bible from beginning to end. The Catholic Bible is very much like the King James Version, only it has 2 extra books and 2 books that are not in the King James Version. But anyway, after 4 or 5 lessons, the young priest that was taking me on these lessons, he told me I had to go visit the Monsignor. He was the head priest. And when they went in there, I got a fair bawling out. I asked too many questions about other churches and about the history of this and that. So anyway, he told me that had to stop. I'm afraid that ended my lessons. Anyway, when I worked for Ken Brown, he gave me the phone number and address of one of his cousins, and they lived at Fort Saskatchewan. And at that time, I just bought a car. 47 Chev Coupe. Wasn't much of a back seat in it. Nothing to sit on anyway. 6-cylinder standard shift. Paid $130 for it. So I had a little freedom. And I went to Fort Saskatchewan and met Roy Galloway. At that time, he was married and had two children, two little children. And we became very friendly. I visited him another time. And he asked me if I'd like to go out to the coast with him. They were going out to visit some relatives. And, well, sure, I wanted to see a little more of Canada. And I really wanted to see those Rocky Mountains. So if we were gone just over a week. I got permission from the people I worked for. The crop was in and sprayed, so things weren't quite as busy. Anyway, when we came home, I think it was a Sunday, but Roy said he had to take the truck and go over and visit a neighbor and pick up some gilts that had been left there with the boar. So I went with him, and I met a man called Sam Melville there. And I guess that was a pretty important day in my life, because 8.5 months later, I married his daughter. I don't think Audrey and I just figured on getting married quite that quick, but we got engaged in January. I went to work there I didn't tell you that Sam offered me a job while I was there, and he was building a pig barn, and I figured I needed the experience in Canadian-style building. Anyway, Audrey and I became engaged, and we took confirmation classes in the United Church together. I was confirmed before our wedding date, anyway. So that was the first time that I actually accepted Christ into my life. But the thing that brought the wedding date ahead was Audrey's sister was getting married on June the 6th. And Granny and Grandpa Melville had to come from Washington in the United States, which is quite a long ways, and in those days people didn't travel like they do today. And Mom Melville sort of said, well, you guys are going to get married in the fall. You can't expect Granny and Grandpa to come up here twice. So our date sort of started back the other way. And finally, Audrey's dad put his foot down and said, why don't you girls have a double wedding? So June 6th was a double wedding. Two brides came down the aisle on father's arm, one on either side. I think that's a scene I will never forget. Anyway, just before Audrey and I got married, some of the Melville's friends were in managerial positions in Sherrett Gordon Mines in Fort Saskatchewan, which is a nickel refinery. And they were looking for help to load fertilizer bags in boxcars. This fertilizer was going to Pakistan. The bags were 112 pounds. And I think these guys found out if they hired city slickers, they couldn't even handle the bags. So they were looking for farm boys. And Sam asked me if I wanted to go. And, of course, I asked him what the wages were. Well, I'll tell you, them wages were pretty good. So I went to work for Sherrett Gordon Mines. And, of course, I had to take 3 days off to get married. And I worked for Sherrett Gordon Mines for 4 years after that. We did rent a farm in that period, and our two oldest daughters were born there. It was a very busy time, and father-in-law helped me quite a bit. He was a guy that's one in a thousand probably. Very gentleman. And in 1962, of course, when we first got married, Audrey was working in a lumber yard, and I had started to work at Sherrett Gordon, and I think I have to say we both knew how to save money. And in 1962, I started to look for a farm. And at that time, Audrey's dad helped quite a bit, and sometimes he would go to the farm when I was working different shifts, and he would say, "No, that farm's not for you," so we wouldn't go look at it on my next days off. But anyway, he went with me, and I remember the first farm that I'd found myself. I was visiting a friend up by Clyde, Alberta. And it had quite a nice house, which appealed to Audrey, of course. And father-in-law came with me on my next days off and looked at this farm, and he said, "You can't farm this. It's too darn sandy." So I certainly listened to him. Anyway, one day I was looking at the Western Producer, and there was a Puffer Agency in Clive, and they had many farms listed. And I showed it to father-in-law, and he said, "Well, what shift you on?" And I said, "Well, I'm on day shift this week." And he said, "Well, I'll go down and check it out." So of course, he went to see Mr. Puffer and told him how much money we had. And like by this time on this rented farm, we had a few cows and I think maybe 8 or 9 sows. It was a half section, but maybe only 190 acres broke. But so the cropping wasn't a big thing, but I'd accumulated a little machinery. But anyway, they decided that there's only one farm that I had money enough to look at. And so we went to look at this farm at Clive. Well, his father-in-law warned me that it's got lots of stones. But anyway, when we got to that farm, we were also looking, it was a half section, we're looking at another quarter, which was kitty corner to this half. And it was 280s belonging to two sisters. And we had talked to the one lady, and so we went in to get something on paper before we went to the Farm Credit Corporation in Lacombe. And the sister said, "I can't sell it to you unless you want to buy the other 80 because my sister wants to sell." Well, it had quite a bit of bush on it, but the price was right, so we got paperwork ready for the farm credit man, and he looked at it on these three quarters, and he asked quite a lot of questions, my background, etc. And that guy's name was Harry Patrick. He'd spent the war years in Britain. So he had a bit of an idea where I was coming from, and he said, "I'll get you the money," which he did. So we moved to Clive. Anyway, the following year, and we joined the United Church. The following year, Monica was born. The year after that, Jack was born. And in 1966, we adopted Wayne. So we had five children. Anyway, I know I'm dragging this out too much. We, 1986, Ron Hilsebeck came to the United Church, and he said they were trying to get a crew together to do some mission work in Peru. And I wasn't in church that Sunday morning, but Audrey came home and she told me about it, and we talked about it for a little bit. And we decided we would like to go. We had quite good hired help on the dairy farm at that time. And that was our first mission trip. And about that time, we saw some things happening in the United Church we didn't like, along with other people. And I think it was the following year that a bunch of us left, and we started meeting in the school in Clive, and that was the start of Clive Christian Fellowship. But in 1990, we went back to Peru again. And I have to say that these missions changed our lives considerably, because these mission trips, we enjoyed them very much, helping poorer people. And on that particular trip, three of us were baptized in the Tumbasa River. Pastor Al Perry was on that trip. So he baptizes in the river there. Walter Wallane was one of them, and Audrey and I. So I think that was a final how should I say, a commitment to Christianity, to Jesus. Anyway, those trips continued and added much to our lives. And I think I'm getting to the end of this lot. Yes, I think I'll end it there with our baptism in Peru. Thank you all so much. And while I'm up here, I'd just like to thank George and Anita for the children's stories. It adds quite a bit of pleasure to our services on Sunday morning. And of course, I have to thank Gordon. And I think we could all see this morning that Gordon had had a pretty good weekend, because he had some really good news. Thank you all. Yeah.